emotions want to move, and the ability, it sounds like, for you to not just say, I'm not feeling sad, just put that over here, or I'll override it with my optimism. The capacity, I think, and this comes in multidimensional knowing for sure, is this is what I'm feeling now, and this is where compassion comes in. This is so hard right now. This is so hard. I know, you know, I'm bent on being gentle with myself. I'm being kind to myself, like letting yourself feel what you feel so that it can move.
Welcome to the Heart Leader Podcast. I'm Amber Mikesa.
And I'm Austin Yule.
We're here to invite you into a new era of leadership.
Join us as we dive deep into stories of powerful transformation, unlocked through self-love, compassion,
and insights on healing the body and soul by blending science and spiritual wisdom.
Start leading from the heart today. Visit the
Heart Leader Podcast. And welcome to the Heart Leader Podcast, where our heart and our mind align. I'm your host, Amber, and today I am joined by Suzanne Anderson. So I just want to take a moment to welcome you to the show, Suzanne. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here with us. I cannot tell you what a joy it is.
Thank you, Amber. I'm looking forward to our conversation together.
Yeah, me too. So we mentioned this book, and I know it's one that is a very, very deep topic for you. So if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to talk about You Make Your Own Path by Walking It, which is a transformational field guide through the trauma and loss. I know that we're just kind of diving right into it. I read it, and I've never experienced the level or the depth that you dove into, but it was still an amazing opportunity for me to step back and realize that the worst thing that's ever happened to us is the worst thing that's happened to us. And it's still an amazing guide to take a step back and navigate through that. So can you talk about the structure of the book and what the book is about?
I think I need to set up a little bit here as a bridge. Because this book, which is actually my second book, I was ready to launch my first book, which is called The Way of the Mysterious Woman, Grading How You Live, Love, and Lead. And I'd done 10 years of research with colleagues in our university women's leadership programs around this possible way for women to be leading that was not constrained inside the masculine model of wholeness. So I'd done that work. That was the end of 2012. Manuscript was done. We were getting ready to launch a new program and bring it out into the world. And on January 3rd, 2013, my beloved husband took his life. And as I say often, with it, mine as I knew it. So there was a moment of like, I'm getting ready to fly, which is literally what I felt I was doing. That's the direction I was moving and of launching. And life said, not so fast, you know, let's see if you can live everything in this book. And then we'll see. So, which is what happened. So this new book, that ultimately I got back to completing that book a year later, and it came out in 2016. So that was great. The second book, You Make Your Path by Walking, was actually not a book I thought I would write. So I did not go through the dissolution of everything in my life with the plan to be a heroine or a hero and, you know, write something that would help everybody else at first. I really went through it to live like a bold experiment about, like, can I get through this? And can I get through this living in this way that I already, as a transformational teacher, was teaching and living? Can I really do this in the darkest, darkest night? And when I, as I'd moved through this about 4 years ago, I decided to write myself back together, actually, initially. Like, I needed to go back into the horror and the trauma of those early years and from an integration perspective for myself initially. And then I had something down. I showed it to my editor from the first book. And she said, you've got to share this. There's so many people going through, well, I would say as a globe, we're going through trauma right now. You know, these are traumatic times, but also many people going through trauma or waking up to trauma they have been through.
And the fact that you took the time to use it as a tool for yourself first First and foremost, to me, that was highly meaningful, especially as a coach, because ultimately your title says it all. You make your path by walking it, or by walking. And ultimately, we have to walk the path that we're going to show others. If, as a coach, I feel like I'm a guide. And so I have to have walked the path many times to be able to show someone else how to walk the path I'm telling them.
Yeah.
And you did exactly that. You know what you're writing about because you've walked it. You know what it's like to be there. So you can take the hand of someone and say, I've been there. I know.
Yeah. No, that's so right. And the thing is, in some ways, the loss was so complete. I mean, I would all hope others don't need to go through this kind of a loss, but I really can meet people in so many domains in that sense, because I lost my beloved. Of course, when you lose your partner, it's also the future you had together that goes. So the way you saw your life unfolding, the way I saw my life unfolding, that future. Part of his reason for choosing to leave his life was because his business was going to come crumbling down. He had a different business than mine. He ran an Indonesian antique business. He was a collector of Indonesian antiques. And anyway, that was going to come crashing down. It ultimately did, and came crashing down on me. So he took all our resources, and that was a lot of resources. We had a very substantial estate. And so without your beloved, without my financial assets, all of that I thought I would have for my own business and the work I was doing in the world, I ended up closing down my business, because that was the right thing to do also. I needed to just see what would emerge. I had two partners, and I let that go. I left the community I was a part of, because I lived on a small island where we were very well known, and it would have been very difficult to find my new life in the ashes of that old, I felt. And yes, and so all of that to say, there was a lot at one time to navigate through. And I did have the sense from the beginning that if I could do this, first of all, I'm absolutely going to walk in the way of the mysterious woman, which is this way of being that integrates, that I've been working with for years, of a way of showing up in authentic connection, loving presence, so on. I would walk in that way. And if I got through, I would have something to offer.
Yeah. So the term mysterious woman, or a term mysterious, does come up frequently in your book. And for anyone who this may be a new term for,
right,
is there any opportunity to give some background on that?
Well, the word actually arose, we'd been doing then, okay, 10 years of this research with hundreds of women in our programs. Basically, this came about from a sense that there was a model of leadership that we women had plugged ourselves into, and we'd become one of the boys in a certain way. And as much as women may have wanted something different, it was either swinging to the other side of, okay, then it's just the goddess over here, or it was the hyper-masculine, and there was nothing in between. And all the studies on human development had been done using male subjects in the early years. Carol Gilligan at Harvard is one of the first women who started to say, wait a second, now we need to do some research on how women develop. And it became really clear to me, working in the leadership space, that the issue women were facing at the time I was doing this, it wasn't about giving them more behavioral skills. It was actually that there was a developmental move to make, like literally a developmental move, like we make from childhood when we learn to walk and we learn to talk and we learn to connect with a peer group, but that we didn't know that was happening. We didn't know that was going on. And so a lot of women were sort of being pressed, you could say, by the evolutionary forces up against the limits of a way of being, a consciousness that needed to expand, but not knowing that, were either stuck in the old mode or feeling they'd failed somehow because they got there and they weren't satisfied. Okay, so that was the work I was doing. And we started after years of kind of decoding what is feminine, what is masculine, what does this actually mean to wake up to our yin-yang nature, you could say. we started to see these ways of being emerge that we didn't have a word for. And I'd been working, you know, one of the main things was this ability to be with uncertainty or ambiguity or the mystery, to partner with things beyond the rational mind, you know, to be with the unfolding mystery. The other part that we saw was the word, came in the word medial, which was a word of Toni Wolff, who was Carl Jung's, you know, creative ally. And she had discovered this way of being for women that is about, you know, holding a middle ground, a middle way, bridging between differences, holding different perspectives. So one day I said, these two words just came together in my head, and the word mysterial popped out of my mouth. And then once it did, it was very interesting. It was sort of like the naming of the way indigenous cultures talk about the potency of naming. Like something literally came alive. I was with my co-author, Dr. Susan Cannon, and the two of us just went, oh my God, we've just given birth to something. So that's the story.
It is very empowering to read it. And I will say, and I've talked about it so many times in my own journey, as I describe my story, it was exactly that experience. I would sit in my corporate positions, and part of the reason I exited corporate was for that very reason. It felt very much like I had to give up my femininity in order to be a leader. And to me, that femininity is part of what made me a good leader. And so I didn't know how to reconcile the two, and it didn't feel as though I had the space to do so. So in part of reading your works and even your website, there's a strong voice that you present in that very space. And so I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Because I think it isn't about the rejection of the masculine for women or actually for men, because the issue we have is the way that Einstein talked about, we can't solve the problems of today with the consciousness that created them yesterday. We're simply in a situation in the world right now where we have created very complex challenges, and the consciousness we have cannot meet them. So that's always how we've grown. You know, that's the evolutionary imperative, you could say, to grow again. And the work that I was doing with women was clear that it wasn't about rejecting 5,000 years, actually, of what I would call the masculine consciousness ascending. And it wasn't about going back to the goddess, but it was something new that was trying to emerge that requires us, men and women, to learn what is my yin nature? What is the feminine nature? And how do I weave that together with my healthy masculine? And then we're in the new space, because there's something new that I've found and that I counted on going through my own dark night that requires that synthesis of feminine and masculine ways of being that I call mysterial. I think you call the heart leader. I suspect they're very similar. Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing, because you also dive deep into talking about conscious expansion in a multitude of ways. And the more that we're willing to understand what our own unique balance of masculine and feminine is, to me, that is an evolution of our own personal consciousness.
The first book was really figuring out, what do we mean when we say feminine? And what do we mean when we say masculine? That was the profound research, I would say, around getting really clear about that. What does that actually mean? And in the new book, there's one section of the book where I write about what I call these eight mysterial metacapacities. And they are the capacities we had started to see. We had named them. It's the last chapter of the first book, The Way of the Mysterial Woman. When, in this case, well, I was working with women, but when they were able to weave together these feminine and masculine capacities and really cultivate them, these ways of being were showing up, and they seemed to be a match for the times. And after I'd done the first pass of the book, of just the writing of me back together, I would say, and I sort of pulled back and looked down at what I'd written, I could see all of a sudden, I was like, oh my goodness, you've actually lived this. Like, we had just started to see them. That was the first book. Like map makers that had seen the territory, but we hadn't yet fully lived into it. And these past years have been, for me, living into those capacities. Yeah.
Beautiful. So the name of your first book, again, just so individuals have that as well.
That's The Way of the Mysterious Woman, Upgrading How You Live, Love, and Lead.
Wonderful. And both of these books are available on your website and on Amazon?
Sure. They're everywhere. Yeah. And I highly recommend you go to your local bookstore.
Yes. I love bookstores.
I know. They're going out. We have to keep supporting them.
Yeah. I love that plug. And your website, just for anyone who's tuning in right now, we'll have it posted everywhere. But I like saying it for anyone who's listening and doesn't have access to the website at the moment.
The Mysterial, that wonderful word, mysterialwoman.com. So that's M-Y-S-T-E-R-I-A-L, woman.com.
Now, I do want to dive a little bit more into your journey and how you navigated through it, especially in the area of compassion. But continuing on that setup that you were talking about, can you share a little bit more about your first book? Because that started before your husband chose to take his life, correct?
You know, as I was saying, it's the manuscript was done. It was ready to come out. We were just in the process of talking to different publishers when he left. Yeah.
Okay. And so did it change at all after?
You know, it did not. So what happened was, other than I, you know, in my acknowledgement, the book was done and we needed to get it out. Well, there was an imperative, I would say, to get it out because we had discovered this code, this developmental code of feminine and masculine archetypes that wake up in a woman's developmental journey from when, you know, being a child all the way up. And I wanted the code to be available for people. Like, people were going to do things with this once they could figure it out, and also really be able, it's full of case studies and practices and ways that people can start to nourish their feminine and masculine essences as needed. And it needed to get out, and there really wasn't anything else to change about that. That research had been done. So it went out, and my co-author and I have a little bit about ourselves in the beginning, where we lay out some of the models, but it's really not our story. We already had the case studies of 9 different women. And so, yeah, that's not my story. And this is very different. And I will say, this is part of what's interesting, Amber, for me, because I do a lot of teaching around the things that we're talking about right now. That's the space I work in. Those are the programs I do in the world for women. And I'm committed to, you know, waking up the conscious feminine, we could say. And now, as this book is coming out, I'm really on a different ground. It's a little more, it's my vulnerable journey. Of course, it comes together with what I've done before, the ground that I was on there. But then this is really my story. And I have, as a teacher, it's not how I was particularly oriented. I didn't talk a lot about myself. I was more interested in the stories of students and their stories and guiding them than telling my stories. So this is quite a shift.
And I would say, as a student and as on both sides of the equation, I gravitate so much to those who are guiding me, who are vulnerable and show self-compassion. Sorry. And then can in turn show compassion toward myself, because we can find that common connection. Even if we haven't had the same experience, I know that like energies can connect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that you talk about in your book is that energetic component of this journey. And sometimes we don't really take the time to acknowledge that, but you talk about it in spades. So I would like to navigate there now, if you're willing to do that.
I think the way I'll kind of thread into this beautiful area of inquiry is to say I already had a very deep, I've had a very long time spiritual practice. I think my first kind of awakening experience was when I was 18. So it's been a very deep and long and central part of the unfolding of my own life, is to have an experience of dimensions beyond my ego's terrain, we could say, my smaller sense of self, my smaller I. But what happened here was profoundly different. When one of the stories I tell in the book, and these are the sort of light and dark stories, it was the light, what I call the light wake up call, which was an experience in Bali where presence basically came in to me and me into it, and that I would call a divine feminine essence. And I was in a state of bliss for a couple of days. My ego fell away. I didn't have any sense of who I was at that level. And sometime in there, the course of that experience of union was an inquiry, will you help to midwife the divine feminine on earth? That was the inquiry. My mind, first of all, is offline, so I didn't say yes or no. I just, every cell in my body was sure that I was a yes. And when my smaller ego and I came back together 2 days later, I realized I'd said yes to something that I didn't have any idea what it meant. I mean, that was the beginning of this journey that I would say really hit me deeply. Then I left my consulting practice quite quickly after that. I opened into this work that I mentioned that led me to the first book. And I thought that was the opening into this energetic, larger field beyond myself. This is what I'm trying to figure out. But I also knew it had to come into the world. It wasn't about going just into a meditation retreat or somewhere in an ashram for years. It was like, no, this needs to come into the world now. So this energetic opening needs to be, women need to be leading in that way, and we need to be in our families in that way, and waking up energetically in the fields that we're in with more of ourselves online. Okay, so then when this happened, I call this the dark awakening, because when David left, something shattered, and this is always the case, that we don't know what we don't know. I think I felt I was really in the flow of all that is. But something broke open in the shattering of my identity and all of the ways I had shaped my identity at that point, and into the world in a way I've never been before. And I talk about it in my writing, about like a hidden wholeness, something that was there for me that I didn't know could be found through this portal. That maybe we could say it was learning to see in the dark. It was learning to be in the dark, true embodiment of what it is to be in this human body in a world that is so interconnected. So I know that's a little bit of a circuitous way to respond to you, but I do feel both were true for me. And the way that lived in the dark awakening was a profound opening of compassion. Now, I thought I was, I would even say, you know, the first being I believe that I connected with was Kuan Yin in that experience in Bali, and she's the goddess of compassion. So I felt I had a lot of compassion already. But there was some almost plexiglass or just something between me and other, and even between me and other dimensions, even though I would have said I had experiences, you know, spiritually of other dimensions, but something like there was shattering all around and opening in all ways. Yeah. So that's sort of get at where you were heading.
Yes. It's a beautiful and such a transparent response, and I am very grateful that you're willing to share something like that, because I feel like many of us, we hide from traumatic experiences. We really fear going through pain, But sometimes that pain is the very thing, not that we want someone to leave our world. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. But as I mentioned, I've not experienced anything like that. But the most painful thing that's happened to us is the most painful thing that's happened to us. And if we look at it as an opportunity for growth, instead of pulling back, as you so beautifully did, you could have shut down, you could have hidden away and run away from everything. But you said, this is my opportunity to take what I had in that first book, put it into practice in my own life, and see where I navigate with it. And you seized it as a conscious expansion opportunity. And it's been an opportunity for the rest of us to grow through your growth and what you've presented to us. And for me, that goes through not just the opportunity to observe that, to feel your energetic expansion, to go through all those multidimensional aspects with you as well, for those of us who are attuned to that. Mm-hmm. And so it's a gift on all of those levels. Mm-hmm. And so I thank you for your transparency in all of those levels too.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting because once I saw those metacapacities arrive in my writing, I realized that I'd lived them. I was in the question about, do I weave them into this book or do I just point people back to the last book? And then I realized, no, first of all, people may never get to the last book. And this is the lived experience of these capacities we've just seen. And I've had several people, other podcasts I've been on, say one of the things that was really helpful for them was that they'd been through something very difficult. They'd had been in the best way they could possibly be. They had grown, but they didn't quite have a way of looking at what they'd grown. And then they could look at, for example, one of the capacities is embracing paradox. And one of the big challenges in any kind of situation like I went through is there are so many conflicting things going on. There are incredible grief and loss, and then there can be incredible loving presence and joy. There can be forgiveness or a desire to forgive and an absolute anger that, you know, this could happen. Sense of betrayal. You have to hold so much complexity, hold all the paradoxes. But if you can do that, and I found that I could do that situation by situation, I could then go somewhere new, like the polarity itself, as I could hold it, took me to some solution I would never have been able to find on one end of that or the other. And so some people might say, then they would say, this was so helpful. I saw that I had also developed embracing paradox, but I hadn't seen that as a capacity. I'm glad that that's happening for people.
It is. It's a beautiful gift. And then looking at the masculine and feminine aspects of that, the ability to rationalize it, but also bring unconditional love to it. There's so much that you can do just by stepping out of it and having a tool or a resource like you're bringing forward in both books to investigate it. Do you mind going through your list of 8 just so individuals can be aware of what you're offering? And then maybe touching on a tool or two just to give a deeper dive?
The 8 metacapacities, and I think the names are actually evocative. And in fact, we thought that when we wrote the first book. Even if you might not know, as I say them out loud, what they mean, but you will find more when you read the book. So multidimensional knowing, and maybe even if, as you're listening, you can see if the words are evocative for you and you think, oh, I kind of have that, or I've been working on that, or I'd like that. What does that mean? Embracing paradox, which I mentioned, authentic presence, energy stewardship, generative mutuality, tending the field, influencing system resonance, and the last one here is unfolding the emergent. So those are the evocative names. And with each one of these metacapacities, I tell a story. So I name them, first of all. I also did I wrote kind of evocative evolutionary, I call them evolutionary invocations, or like poems at the beginning of each chapter where I'm introducing that capacity. And I invite you to read, like, actually read it, as so you can imagine yourself as that person on the edge of evolution, that this is actually a capacity awakening in you and what it means. So you get it in your heart and your body, not just in your mind.
So when you discuss energy stewardship, because this is the multidimensional and the energy stewardship are very, very near and dear to me. All of them are beautiful, but in my world, those two are so interlinked. Mm-hmm. Do you mind sharing maybe those two?
Well, all right. So multidimensional knowing, this was really and is so potent because we have done a great job all these years of the masculine ascendant pattern, the yang focus for 5,000 years. So we've developed a logical analysis, a rational mind, all of which super important. We absolutely need those capacities. But that's one way of looking and one way of taking in information. Of course, it's not the whole picture. So then you also have the imaginal, and that we could call that, let's say, accessing through the right brain. But how do you start to imagine, see things in the future, get that creative knowing coming streaming in? And then cultivating the heart's intelligence. Now, fortunately, that's something that's there's more attention spent on now, emotional intelligence. And we have a lot of great authors to thank for that, for doing that work, the neuroscience of that. But the way that you are always taking things in through the heart and being able to filter that information, know what the information is saying to you. Then there's the body, somatic intelligence. How do you, what are sensations? Are you getting? What are you knowing in the moment purely from the vessel of your body? And then there's a spiritual intelligence. So there are all these ways you might work with the cycles, for example, of the moon, which I do, and was a very powerful thing for me throughout my life, actually, and certainly in the years after the trauma. Ways of knowing that when you're plugging into other cycles that are happening in the cosmos and in the natural world. So that would be multidimensional knowing. It's so rich. But like any capacity, it has to be developed. I mean, you don't get to be a really good, logical, rational person able to analyze things without some building of that capacity because it's valued. We just haven't valued adequately all of these other capacities. And again, I'll just say, the reason multidimensional knowing is coming online now is because we 100% need that complexity for dealing with the issues in our lives and in our businesses and in our communities. So it's a beautiful thing. And for me, it was essential because there were so many complex decisions I had to make. And this is one of the key ones that I'll just use a personal example, was right in the beginning, where I had to decide whether I would become, I was listed in the will as the executor, of course. But the question I was in once I began to see what, it's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, you went behind the curtains and I saw what was actually going on in David's business. Then the question I was in with a good friend of mine who is a forensic accountant, as we looked at his business and tried to figure out what had been happening was, is there any advantage to being, should I just literally walk away from our estate, and which was a multi-million dollar property, and everything else that was a part of this, would that be the best thing for me to do? Or would I try to fight for the main asset, which was the property itself, to sell it myself, not have the bank take it, so that there would be some resources available for some of the people from whom he had borrowed money in his close-in family circuit and friends who were my friends, who were dear people to me, and bring a kind of, I want to say, stability to the pattern that was like a big vortex wanted to take everything down. And I had to use every way of knowing that I had. I did, you know, as much as I could in analysis. In trauma, your prefrontal cortex is not that functional. So I had a lot of people helping me figure things out. Then I was watching the signs and the signals and having conversations with people and feeling what I felt in my heart. And because I knew it was going to be an enormous risk whichever way I went, but it was a decision for which the consequences were huge for me and for many. And I wasn't going to do it out of a heroic, you know, I will do this and throw myself under the bus. That was an example for me. I did choose, but you'll read more when you read the book. I did choose to accept that role and walk through the fire. But that was a decision that took my multidimensional knowing. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And to me, that's also a beautiful example of it's not one or the other. Again, it's this blending that really yields the most amazing outcome. And as you said, it's practice. It's practice of utilizing the integration and finding that balance point in each experience of how you get the most out of all of the resources that are available to us.
Yeah. And really, this is the move, I'd say, one of the opportunities through, you know, any of the listeners that are going through their own loss, which doesn't have to be as traumatic as mine, but there are lots of losses that are, it could be loss of, you know, a phase of your life that's ended as you leave a job or because you have an illness, or a child leaves home, or you're changing careers, or all of those moments, those threshold moments especially, they are the times when we need this capacity, right, to know from a lot of different directions, because we're going to be walking. This is the title of the book, You Make Your Path by Walking, on to new ground.
Yeah.
And you will never know, and if you're really in one of those moments, there's a trusting, and the title of this book came from one of my favorite poems by Antonio Machado, who's a Spanish poet. And he writes this beautiful poem, and one basically this line is in it, You Make Your Path by Walking. But he writes about how the if you look the back of a boat, you know, there's the wake behind you. Like, that's your life that you've lived. That's behind you. You can't go back there. What's ahead is what's ahead. You don't know what's ahead either. And so multidimensional knowing goes right in that zone, in these critical moments where you have enough awareness that you can really be listening in all these levels for, I want to say, your destiny line for a particular path. I believe there are many probability paths in a lifetime and that we might take and that we might happen. I don't believe it was destined for David to take his life. I think that was one of the options. It's the one he chose. And of course, with it, then that became my probability path. Once I was walking on this path, then where I would end up was really about how I could meet the moment. And that's, you make your path by walking, meet the moment, this moment, not like I'm going to do this now because then I'll get back to my life.
Yes.
It's like, this is my life and I won't get this moment back. This is actually my life now. I may not like it. It's really hard, but I'm here and I'm in my body and I'm in this embodiment and, I'll walk from here.
It's an amazing way to view it. And as you said, it doesn't have to be a major trauma. For me, reading it, and you hit it, when my son moved out, it was a big shift for me. And I didn't know exactly how to get him set up, how to get him structured in a way that he was successful in a transition, which then caused angst for me. And for me, that was a big thing. Having tools like this that allow me to pull out of to feel the emotion, to not suppress it, but pull out of it enough to navigate it in the most successful way for myself and for all of those around me, that is both intellectual and heart-centered.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And actually being able to, what you're describing there is kind of, emotional wisdom, where you can, and this is something that is central to the work I do, and I did use for myself, which is being with the emotion that is rising. So that is not over-identified with it, where you get carried away on that wave, because there are waves that move. It's this beautiful thing, you know, as you know, you are a human vessel. You know, the waves, the emotions are meant to move. They come up, they come down, they go. If we don't attach to them and either, you know, hold on to them and make them, try to make it last, or hold on to it because it's so hard, and we let it move, it will move. Emotions want to move. And the ability, it sounds like, for you to not just say, I'm not feeling sad, or I'll just put that over here, or I'll override it with my optimism. The capacity, I think, and this comes in multidimensional knowing for sure, is to be with, this is what I'm feeling now, and this is where compassion comes in. Oh, you know, sweetie, that's so hard. You know, I did that with myself so many times. This is so hard right now. This is so hard. I know, you know, I'm being gentle with myself. I'm being kind to myself, like letting yourself feel what you feel so that it can move. And then you can go out in the kitchen and be with your son and be the way you want to be. It's a beautiful capacity.
And it's one that gets practiced, and with resources like the one that you're offering. And I believe you speak, you have coaching programs, you have these things that can empower, especially women, to rebalance and understand. So can you share a little bit about that as well? So if someone's seeking guidance, if someone is navigating through something that they're just suppressing right now because they just need to move forward, that happens a lot. And I find it so often. It's like, I'll think about that later because right now I just need to power through this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that comes back and it triggers issues in the future. So if they have someone that they can look to, it's beneficial. So can you talk a little bit about how someone might be able to get to your resources?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just on that note, I want to say sometimes, and this is the thing about building capacity, sometimes you do have to power through something. And this is where I know I was very compassionate with myself. Sometimes there's that thing you have to do. The child has to get to school. The something has to happen. And so I think there is that enormous capacity or courage even sometimes to rise up. For me, it was just even getting up out of bed every morning at the beginning, so to rise into the moment of your life, and the courage you sometimes have to find in yourself to just do what needs to be done. So yes, and I acknowledge that. And then there is the tender caring for your own, the time that you make space for yourself, the tender caring for yourself after that, where you do come home and have a cup of tea and have a good cry, or go for a run, or you take the time to be with yourself and honor and acknowledge what you just had to pull together to do that thing you had to do, which is a little different than what you're saying, which is, you know, someone who's just going to go, I'm going to take care of this thing, and they just don't have any relationship to what's underneath. So I just want to offer that.
Thank you.
But then, okay, so how could people immediately, if you're feeling resonance with what I'm saying, my website, of course, is a great place to begin. There are other podcasts on that website and other blogs that I've written and videos, and to get a sense really of the archetypal pathway that this work that I do takes you through. And the first book has, as I mentioned, lots of practices in it, so that, let's say you identify the archetype that is really needed, you need more of in your life, is the maiden archetype, which is that part of ourselves that is the wild feminine, what I call the dynamic feminine energy. And there's a sort of shake it up, break it up, that sort of energy. Then there's some practices that you might do to do that. You know, there are practices in that first book that can help you to do that. But in the second book, it's coming out in June, and there are practices at the back of the book that I think were particularly powerful for me in going through. And in case somebody would never read the first book, I wanted people to have some things that would be immediately helpful. And one of them is a practice I call deep practice. And that was the practice that, and that's in the first book as well. And it's basically what we've just talked about how you work with the wave of an emotion, how you actually let yourself be with the wave when it moves, so that you can find, you know, let it move, let it give you the information it needs to give you, whatever that emotion is, and find your way back again to center. Because obviously for me anyway, and what I was going through in life in general, I would like to be centered and present for the decisions I have to make. I don't want to be making decisions or behaving from the reactivity of my trauma body. So how do you do that so that you're able to meet the world that's coming toward you? And that's a practice in the book.
That's great. Can someone pre-order your book on your website?
Pre-order available, yeah, everywhere. Mm-hmm. In all the bookstores and Amazon and bookshop and yeah. Yeah, and if somebody is out in this part of the world, which is the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, I'm doing a women's retreat. It'll be the first time I've actually done a retreat separate from a program, because my programs are, we do retreats inside of those global programs. But this will be from June 8th to 11th, just for women. But it's called You Make Your Path by Walking Retreat. And we're going to have a deep, nourishing dive into the three faces of the feminine that will work with the mother archetype, the maiden archetype, and the crone archetype. Very nourishing. Yeah.
Well, if you can send us details, we will post that all over the website, our website as well, so folks know how to get to that. I'm certain you likely have limited space, but we're happy to share so individuals can get in.
Yeah, I'll send you that right after we're done here. That'd be great.
That'd be wonderful. Well, as we're wrapping up, we do have a wrap-up question. We like to hear feedback from individuals who are on the show with. And that's centered around the term heart leader and what that invokes within you when you hear yourself called a heart leader.
Well, I think, as I said, I would call that a mystery. I would say the resonance for me is mysterial leader. And the heart leader, which I love that, immediately I have to put my hand on my heart. So that's where I start, is just feeling. You have to come into your body, your own dear heart. You know, I come into my own heart just in trying to feel into that. How will I respond to that? And it's a different center of gravity than a head leader, although I will say I use my head and I also use my body, of course, and the body knowing. But there's something about the heart to heart that takes us into the great, beautiful web of connection that we have with all beings and other dimensions, actually. I would say what comes to me right now is that there's a way in which the we space, sometimes been called, or the creative future is in the heart, I feel, my heart, and then my heart with your heart. I mean, the place, the things that we've explored here today, because we're opening a heart field together, I would say. I've heard myself saying things I haven't said before. So I think, okay, maybe you've thought things you haven't thought before. You know, that there's something about the future that's trying to come into form that I think is shaped by a heart leader. And I feel enormous resonance with that. So whether I call that mysterious leader or heart leader, I think we're in the same tribe.
I love it. Well, thank you for vibing with me in our tribe and being on the show. I cannot wait to go back now and get the other book and binge read that the way that I did this book, and just have the whole set of knowledge and wisdom that you're bringing forward. And to the Suivera community, I cannot encourage you enough to pre-order You Make Your Own Path by Walking. It is a wonderful, wonderful read. Very easy. I did honestly binge read it. So definitely pre-order that. And now once I have the opportunity to go back and read her first book, I will also share my views on that, as long as you're okay with that, Suzanne.
That, of course, yes, please.
Fantastic. And that completes this episode of the Heart Leader Podcast. We will make certain that all of the links for how to get a hold of this very wise, mysterious woman is posted everywhere. Our Instagram, Facebook, and out on our website. I can't encourage you enough to go see all of the free content that she has available and then continue to follow along. And we will get the retreat information posted out there as well. Until next time, remember you can pop on over to our Facebook or Instagram and send the word compassion to get this month's free download. And I look forward to seeing you in our Suivera community. Thank you for listening to the Heart Leader Podcast. Are you ready to start leading from the heart? Visit theheartleaderpodcast.com to take our quiz and get your personalized roadmap for a happier and healthier life. Remember to follow the podcast so you never miss a new episode. And be sure to recommend it to your friends who might enjoy it with you. See you next week.